be blue, 'cause I can't see you. Richie, I love you.
Hello, welcome to Vintage Annals Archive Outsider Podcast. This is your host, Richie Wexler. Very happy to be here as always. I'm very excited about our guest this week, Daryl Lamont Jenkins. I've known Daryl, I don't know, 10, 15 years through West Philadelphia. He's the founder and executive director of One People's Project, a Philadelphia-based anti-hate organization that researches, monitors, and reports on right-wing groups and individuals that seek to polarize communities. He's done a lot of really interesting things as well. There was he did some work where he helped rehabilitate someone to go through them being a skinhead, essentially, which was turned into a movie called Skin that came out in 2018. There's a documentary of the same content called Erasing Hate, and he was also part of another documentary called Alt-Right, and he's just fighting the good fight. And what was cool about Daryl is, you know, once we started talking, I realized that in a lot of ways, Daryl's much more passionate about music in some ways than he is, well, maybe equal. I mean, he's deeply passionate about music. And as you know, I do a lot of research on this podcast, but I also just kind of go with the flow sometimes. And it felt like that's what he wanted to talk to. And that's what we kind of got into more. Although you will hear about his other work. Anyway, he's an awesome person. I know he's been having some health issues. I know there's been a fundraiser for him. I will put that on in the body of this episode, and I will put it around when I post this. And if you can help him out, that'd be great. He's been dealing with some health stuff, and he could use some help. Anyway, enjoy. Take care.
A lot of things in regards to being in the Air Force that warrant some explaining.
Sure, man. Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
You know, I was in the Air Force, you know, right out of high school. I went into basic training on my 18th birthday, you know. So it was kind of like I wanted to get away. I mean, I lived in Jersey all my life, so I wanted to get away. I wanted to see the world and, you know, experience new things. The other thing is, wanted to get money for schooling and all that. I wanted to go to college after I got out of the military. But there was a lot of things that happened that ended up making the experience in the military not the greatest in the world. One of those things was not having the job I wanted to do. I ended up becoming a cop. Not exactly my first choice. And I was a very lousy cop, and I didn't last long in the Air Force because I've had just like this trajectory just downward from then on. I was in the Air Force for like 2 years, 8 months, and 10 days, and we both came to a mutual agreement that it was time for me to go. It's nothing, I honestly will tell you flat out, that it's nothing to boast about, really, because I let a lot of people down. You know, I've boasted about it in the past, but, you know, as you get older, you tend to think about it. And it's like, you know, there are some people that, you know, that I hurt. In the long run, I still maintain that obligation to protect and defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I mean, I still have that mindset. It's just a matter of taking the job on by myself instead of having the military behind me when I do it.
And I also just feel like, I don't know where were you, we don't need to talk more about this, but I'm assuming being a cop in the military meant you probably had to do a lot of things that you didn't feel good about, which is a good reason to not be. I mean, there's something said for things that you can't do, like the idea of power of no, meaning like that was probably not a good thing for you in the first place.
Well, there's a couple of things about that. One, being in the military in general basically put me in that role. But being a cop in the military was just, you know, I wasn't really politically minded yet. But that political mindset started to develop while I was in, because I still had an idea of where I was going, you know, philosophically, you know. And the thing is, I started seeing things that, you know, I totally disagreed with. Even if I didn't understand what was going on. And in the end, it was really not so much politics. It was just my ineptness that got me removed. It had nothing to do with politics whatsoever. When it comes to that, there were certain things that I stood for, certain things that I just believed in without having a political agenda to it, without believing in I have to just maintain this narrative and none of that kind of thing. You know, it was just general principle when it came to me. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I started following neo-Nazis while I was in the military. It was just a simple thing of just seeing them on TV and just sitting record on the VCR, just a document. But that was at that time, it was really just a morbid curiosity. It became a labor of love really after I got out and I started really getting involved politically and started recognizing that a lot of the stuff that I hear in the mainstream, I just heard on Donahue.
I want to hear about this, but can we just go back a drop? I want to hear about this. I don't want to cut you off, but I want to go back a drop. Is that okay?
Sure.
I want to like hear about you being involved with the punk scene. I want to kind of get a figure, like, I'm curious on where this stuff, you had a public access show. It says you're a reporter. I'm curious. I feel like I'd like to include that. And maybe that's what you're talking about, but it seems like,
well, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of the music, I wasn't listening to punk back then, back when I was in the military. I did not know even where to begin on that one. I would say that I was really just a student of music to begin with. I just loved whatever music was coming my way. I wanted to be about it. And basically, I was listening to some of that weird metal, that glam metal stuff back then. I was listening to a lot of hip hop back then, especially Public Enemy. Public Enemy, when I went to go see them in concert, it was like, oh shit, what the hell just happened here? I am in the wrong business. I mean, I've said that before, but it was kind of like, you know, like my favorite concert of all time will always be August 11th, 1988. It was Stetsasonic, EPMD, Public Enemy, DJ Jazzy Jeff, Fresh Prince, Run DMC.
Where was that at?
That was at the Hampton Coliseum in Hampton, Virginia, just outside base.
And that's where you grew up at? Where'd you go from? Jersey? You grew up in Jersey. Where in Jersey? In
Jersey, yeah. I was stationed at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. So I was just right out. So the concert was just right there. And, you know, a lot of your big names came through and played that concert hall, that Coliseum. Grateful Dead was notorious for playing Hampton Coliseum. So
I'm curious if you were, I don't know exactly where you get more political, but I'm curious if the music kind of, I mean, seeing Public Enemy had to include some of that, right?
Public Enemy was really important in that regard, basically because I wasn't hearing it in the music until they came along. They, you know, you would just hear people just slam Louis Farrakhan, for example, Louis Farrakhan. And, you know, Joanne Chesimard, Asada Shakur. And they were, you know, like the bad people. They were the bad people in my life at this point. But when you hear a line, supporter of Chesimard coming from Chuck D or Farrakhan's a prophet, and I think you ought to listen to it, it's like, okay, this is the first time I've heard anybody say something positive about Louis Farrakhan and Joanne Chesimard. I'm still calling her Joanne Chesimard at this point. So her name is Asada Shakur. After I saw that concert, I started realizing that there were some things that I was not being able to, I guess, engage in while I was in the military. And I started changing my attitude, started reading more books, especially Dick Gregory's books from the 60s.
For people that don't really know that, I feel like he doesn't really get talked about a lot. Can you give a little, like, what you got out of those or what you found in those?
Well, see, it's the thing is about those books is that he, Dick Gregory was a comedian. Dick Gregory was a comedian who, as time went along, especially since he was a comedian coming up in the Civil Rights Movement, he realized that a lot of the things that he was saying wasn't really all that funny. I mean, things that was going on. So he pulled out of that and just started being a little bit more of an activist, a whole lot more of an activist, I should say. And because of that, and he wrote several books. One of the first books I ever read of his was called Write Me In. And It was about him running for president. I have it somewhere. I think my friend in Rhode Island has my book, but it was really just an eye opener for me. When I start reading books like that, it was just, okay, this is the direction I need to go in, but I can't go into it while I'm here. So I started getting more and more annoyed by the fact that I was in the military. And by this time, you know, I didn't have a future in the military, really. I mean, I was just messing up left and right. And I just simply didn't want to be there by the time I got kicked out. So, you know, so you read Dick Gregory, you watch, listen to Public Enemy, and you start paying attention to what really is happening on some of these Donahue shows. And it's like, okay, all right, I shouldn't be here. And as of March 31st, 1989, I wasn't.
I want to point out that the way you're talking about this almost sounds like Malcolm X. Almost sounds like somebody who was in prison speaking about these things that opened up their world.
For myself, I would say it was a kind of a prison. I didn't realize it was a prison, but that's me. I'm not, again, believe it or not, I'm not going to diss the military. I'm really not going to diss the military. I can't do that to the people that I left behind. I don't think that's fair. I think that there was a direction that I was going in my life that did not involve the military. My mistake has always been that I never really appreciated what I was doing while I was in the military. I still had a job to do. And I did not take and I did not take that job seriously because I had other ideas of what it is I was going to be doing with my life. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, if I had gotten the job that I wanted while I was in, it probably would be a totally different story.
What did you want that job to be?
Oh, I wanted to be in the Armed Forces Network. I knew exactly. See, this is the thing. I knew exactly what it is I wanted to do before, you know, I even left the military. So whenever I ended up not doing that because of some screw up on my part again, that was the end of it for me. I mean, I pretty much was just like, you know, I really don't care.
I just want to take you and this audience to future Daryl, who has been featured in two documentaries and had a film made about him. So I just feel like I hear you're saying, I don't want to discount what you're saying, but you've done amazing shit. And I always, when everyone says, oh, I'm not, I just like to kind of push back at that a little bit, because to me, I've been super impressed by you from day one. And it's not easy being a person of color fighting neo-Nazis. It's not a job as a Jew. It's not a job I would ever want. So
there was a lot. There's a lot when I say when it comes to that.
We can get into that. I'm just saying, I just want you to realize that you're to me at least, you're like a hero, and I don't want you to be
and
too
I appreciate
hard
that. I really do.
You get to feel what you want to feel, but I just need to express to you, at least for me and the viewers, that you're an impressive person.
I think, and I appreciate that. Again, I mean, I think with me, there was just a lot of things that I knew I should be doing, right? And, you know, getting kicked out of the military put me on that trajectory.
So tell me, I'm curious. So you that happened. So then is that how you started getting into public access? Is that how you got into being reported and activism, or not so much?
Well, here's how that went down. You know, once I got out, it was a case of wanting to still be in, the arts, still wanted to be in media work and things like that. But it was a question of not knowing how. So, you know, once I got out of the military, a couple of months later, I'm in school. I'm doing communications and stuff like that. And I started, checking out people, not actually going to shows yet. I wasn't going to any bands, not going to any concerts except for the big arena shows and stuff like that. I didn't know what direction I was going into yet. So I was hanging out with my friends while I was in college and things like that. But my boy Tori, rest in peace. He was a punk kid from, you know, he was already in the punk scene and all that. And he said he was going to a show. This was like in 90. And I said, okay, I'll go. I had the car. So we drove over to the show, and it was, and the show was over at Rutgers University. And It was first opening act was this was the lineup in this order: Frozen Grin, Bouncing Souls, Loose, and Shades Apart. And when the Souls came on, I mean, Frozen Grin was out of sight, but when the Souls came on, that was when I saw everybody just eating it up. And I'm sitting there going, it looked like, I mean, you know, by this time, the only kinds of shows that I had gone to at this point was just basically, you know, arena shows. So you just hear the crowd. That's what I'm used to seeing. Go to a smaller show and you see everybody just getting all into it, getting on stage and stage diving and just basically being a part of the show themselves. And I was in.
And was this a punk show? Because I don't know those bands. I have a shitty punk history. I don't know a lot about punk.
Shades Apart have been around for a long time. Bouncing Souls are legendary. Yeah, Bouncing Souls. This was all before they were signed. And you saw all of this. And of course, after the show, we all just hung out. We didn't go home. We all didn't go home and talk about what a great concert it was. We all just went and hung out at one of the bands' house. you know, it's just like that made all the difference in the world for me, because then you started talking to not just the band, but also people who were trying to put something together. You know, I wanted to be in a band at that time, but I thought I was going to be in one of these weirdo hardcore metal bands or something like that at that time. Once I started getting into the scene and just saw how down to earth, that was important. Candid, you know, just being who they are, you know, that kind of thing. That changed everything.
Real quick, what did you play an instrument? Did you sing? What was your instrument?
Well, that was a fun part about being in the scene. I mean, really, I just sang. But I would say that because of it, when you're in the punk scene, you just pretty much can play whatever instrument you want to play. You suck at first. But then you figure it out.
Did you write songs as well? I wrote songs.
They were weird.
Oh my God. I wish you had an instrument right now and could just play one of those for me, right? Or just...
Well, see, here's the thing. Here's the thing about it. I wasn't really all that. I ended up not having a band that played out either. I mean, didn't have a lot of songs that played out. And they were all like cheesy folk songs after a while.
Oh, that's so good. You would have been in a folk metal band, not a folk hardcore band. You could have done songs about The Hobbit and Lords of the Rings. I just think it's a funny world to me, that whole world of, like, you know, hardcore, like, people singing songs about fucking hobbits is hilarious to me. All right, so I want to hear about this public access show, if we can. I just want to kind of guide us along a little bit.
As I got into the punk scene, as I started getting involved with the scene and all that, it started reminding me of the hip hop scene. Now, you know, hip hop, you know, straight out from the underground. And, you know, they didn't wait for, you know, to get that major record deal. They got their labels. They had their clubs. They were down to earth. They were people that you knew from the street. You know, that's how it went in hip hop. And you knew a new people here and there that was trying to be a rapper. Of course, at that time, when I was coming up in high school, when you were into hip hop, the only people that you could really see go big was from New York, period. It wasn't until 88, 89 that you started seeing people from outside of New York becoming famous, becoming big, you know. But the hip hop scene was what it is that I had gravitated towards when I was in high school. Now it was the punk scene, because I was starting to bond with everybody, and I started to notice everybody was freeing their own labels, just like in hip hop, going to their own clubs, just like in hip hop, creating their own art, creating their own books, and, you know, their own scene, their own culture, their own identities. And the one thing that I noticed that we weren't doing was television. So I said, okay, let's try to hype up. My thing was, let's try to hype up bands. And by this time, it wasn't just punk bands. It was just really bands that weren't signed. Bands that weren't on major labels, you know. And I called the show Channel X. And it was based. And what I did was just like little capsule bios about bands. I interviewed them. I showed them playing at various clubs, and it went good for a good 3-4 years, and then I stopped. I think I stopped because I was on my because I moved to Cleveland or something like that. So I did that for about 3 years, and there was a lot. I mean, Bouncing Souls ended up on the show. I ended up actually being the first person ever to put them on TV.
Plus, you're probably carrying like an 800-pound camera before one of those fucking like VCR things on the side, and then you have a separate camera. I'm just fucking with you, but it's heavy. It's heavy shit, right?
That was the very first thing I shot with. But when I bought my own camera, it was just a little 8mm Kyocera.
So you shot. I was curious. I was going to ask you before. I was curious on the type of media you like to shoot. Were you doing film? Were you doing audio? Did you like all of it?
It was just a straight up camcorder. And I still had a lot to learn when it came to that, because a lot of my videos are rather dark. But they worked. They worked for what it was. I mean, I had shot, I have tons of videos still to this day. I'm looking at them right now that I shot. I want to dub them. I want to basically save them for digitize them. Fortunately, when you play them, they break. And I know people always talk about baking the tapes. I don't know where to begin with that. And these tapes are so valuable, I don't want to do that. I don't know how it works, but I'm going to start talking to people about, because I got a lot of videos. Because what I used to do back then was go around town. I always had my camcorder with me. Whenever I was going to a show, just set up the camera and just start shooting the show. And some of it's on YouTube now. Some of it that wasn't even on Channel X. It was kind of like, for me, I wanted to basically contribute to the scene. You know, I wanted to be a part of the scene, and I wanted to be a part of the scene in the most unique way. And the most unique way was to do a TV show.
So what was your show like? Were you showing these clips? Were you talking about, like, what was your show like?
It was basically showing clips and interviewing the band. That was basically it. And like I said, you can see some of the bands on YouTube right now. If you just look up Channel X. And if I come up, that's one thing. There's some other things that are called Channel X now. But it was so much fun, because, you know, I actually stood there and just watch all these bands just tear up a room. You know, it's just like I'm looking around at everybody and just saying, you know, these are the days we are going to call the good old days.
In your memories, if you can remember, and I don't care. I think a lot of people assume, like, what, you know, what were the big bands? I'm curious about the weird bands, the good bands, the good experiences. What were some bands, if you remember, that you shot, if you can think about it?
Oh, man. I mean, when you talk about the Souls and all that, I mean, they had this thing in the backyard in there, in where they were living. They used to call it Soulapalooza, and you'll have bands up there that'll just be playing a backyard party.
The Souls punk, or were they something else?
They were punk. They still are to this day. But it's crazy, because, I mean, you got bands from New York that are just coming up. I mean, just seeing all the shoot. I mean, I'm just trying to think about one of the things that will stand out. And it's just, you know, one of the biggest things that stands out is that a lot of these bands that I have recorded right now don't even exist anymore. No one even knew they existed.
And because of your work, they do exist, yeah. which is why it's important.
And even the bands that did carry on, they look at some of the video that I have, and there's songs in the videos that they forgot. That they never recorded. So it's like I got this little archive of things that we did, particularly here in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And not only that, but you also have a recording of what New Brunswick was like back then. If you come here today, it's been so gentrified, it's ridiculous.
If I can come see some of this footage, I will come visit you in New Brunswick in the next week.
But again, the scariest thing in the world right now is playing these tapes. I don't want these tapes to break. It's important. I mean, I have some tapes that are broken that just simply need to be fixed. Once I know, I'll be honest with you, once I know that we can archive all these tapes, I'm definitely going to hit up do a GoFundMe, because I'll say, hey, look, this is stuff that you are going to want to see in some fashion. And you know we're getting of that age. You and I are getting of that age where the things that we remember, the people that remember, are starting to leave us. I just lost my friend Ray Clowens, who was on two of my programs, and you know, I'm glad that I have that. Unfortunately, I can't share it with anybody right now because I don't have the tools to actually, you know, digitize. Although some of that is on 3/4, I could probably pull that off. And I just need to get a 3/4 inch deck. That's a form of videotape. I'm sure you didn't want to just talk about.
No. This honestly, like this is why. So when we do it, I leave it open because to me, I never would have expected this part. And this part, especially for our listeners and for my liking, is the best part so far, in my opinion, because it's something I did not expect. And I feel like I got to unearth something with you that I never expected. So just believe me, this is all great.
Hey, let me tell you, I think that one of the important things about whenever you do the stuff that I do and others do is that at the end of the day, you're fighting for something. There is something, and I always try to end my, whenever I'm speaking to a crowd, I always try to end it by telling people, remember to enjoy the things that you're fighting for. Because if you don't, you're nothing but a robot. You're not out there to fight for a better world and not enjoy it.
And I think there's a correlation. It's funny. I feel like people that I know, and I guess I identify, I don't toot my own horn at all, but there's certain people that I feel like understand that these are important times to document, but also have a sense of justice. I think that's common in certain people. They just have a sense of like, this is important. The kind of people that will go into a used shop and see all these photos and know they got to take them home. And I think those are a lot of people that also just think about like equality and think about, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but I think it's a certain quality in people that they just understand justice and what's important and what's right and wrong and what stories that need to be told.
Right, right. And I think that's basically...
Maybe it's being a sensitive person in some way. I don't know if you identify that way, but maybe it's more like just trying to do something better in the world and help and be like,
you exactly. know. I mean, like I said, you want to try to create a better world.
Yeah.
But you want to try to create a better world for yourself as well as for others.
Well, I think you bring a good point about having fun. If you're not having a good time, what the fuck's the point of it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not having a good time, if you're not appreciating life,
yeah,
you don't want to. There's so many, and I don't care what side of the political spectrum you are. There are so many out there that do this and really just have no real reason to do it other than the camaraderie. This is true. The camaraderie that they have amongst those that are also fighting for whatever. And that's all well and good. But if you don't have a moment to take to yourself and just smell those flowers you were growing, you know?
Well, and in talking to you about like, you know, video and photography, like I've had to really work at, when I go shoot something, I've had to work at putting my fucking camera down sometimes. Because if you don't, then I'm not really there. Although sometimes you could argue you're more focused, and I don't know, but I really appreciate what you're saying here.
Whenever you see me today, what is it that I have in my hand? A GoPro. I'm always going to have a camera with me. I mean, I think the cell phone camera is the greatest invention since sliced bread. I mean, especially when it comes to the work we're doing, everything that we do is now being documented in some fashion.
And if I have this memory correct, I think you helped me with this. It was a little small rally, maybe 5, 8 years ago, 6, I don't know, somewhere in there. And it was where that statue on Kelly Drive, not Kelly Drive. Yeah, I guess Kelly Drive is some kind of like Columbus statue. And I pulled my camera out and you're like, no. And you're like, these people don't want their photo taken. I was like, oh, and I had no idea. And it was really a nice moment. You could have been a dick about it and you weren't. And I just feel like, you know, it's not interesting to think about.
I know people will be, and it's always a matter of trying to make sure that everybody's safe and secure.
Which is a nice thing. I feel like you gave me a kindness, and it was just interesting. It's interesting to think about, like, you know, you're talking about shooting, but you also know who to shoot and who not to. And that's to me, that's a big piece of getting people to be part of things is respecting them. You know?
And I'll be honest with you, I love to see, I would love it if we were able to just basically show ourselves and say, hey, look, this is who we are, what we do. But then you start realizing, then you have to also take into consideration, do you want a grandstand or do you want to get some shit done? Sometimes you can't do both. I prefer you not the grandstand at all, because basically it's about the work. It's about doing what needs to be done. You don't have to be on camera to do it, you know, and sometimes it could be detrimental to you if you are. Now, this is coming from somebody who has been on TV and documentaries, and you know, I'm doing a podcast right now.
There you go. The best one in the world.
Yeah.
we now have three listeners, and we only have to pay one of them.
Oh, so you don't pay for the second one. No, but seriously, I mean, yeah, I put myself out there. I put myself out there because I'm a media guy. I was doing this beforehand. It doesn't matter. I mean, for me, when it's not about the celebrity hood, it's not about grandstanding and all that. It's about building a platform where I can inform, where I can educate, where I can teach people exactly what it is I've been through, what it is I've seen, what it is you've been through and seen, what is it supposed to look like, how can we fix things. That's important.
Right, but is there ever a point where the more mature part of you says, Daryl, why are you telling a bunch of white supremacists where you are, who you are? Does it ever put you in danger? I'm curious.
Of course it does.
How do you figure that out? Like, I would not be as brave if I'm being honest.
I think my attitude is recognize who they are, recognize your own boundaries and avenues that you can chart. It's just knowing how to handle the situation in a way that doesn't get yourself in trouble, get yourself jammed up by these guys.
If you're comfortable talking about it, have you been in situations where you almost didn't survive your life? Where you have been in situations where you felt like you were close to not surviving the next day?
No, I you know, honestly, I don't think I've ever really seen that. I mean, yes, I've had my skirmishes here and there, but I don't think there's anything that has been, you know, really life-threatening. I mean, people have threatened to bomb my parents' house.
How do you respond to something like that?
I got to just deal with it however I deal with it. But I'll tell you this, my family is not one to fuck with. I mean, I'm the nice one. I mean, you can come after me all you want, but if you come after my family, I'm just going to have to leave what comes next up to God's will. Because I mean, my father's no longer with us, but he was a drug counselor, and he was on the up and up, and I got to tell you this story. But he used to treat people who were straight up, you know, gangsters, or straight up hitmen and all this. Because I remember one guy he told me about was like, he says, look, I will not give you money. I will not lend you my car, but I will kill for you because that's all I do. And you know, obviously my father wasn't going to go down that road ever. But when you consider the kind of relationship my family would have, you know, with the greater society, you could pretty much say, all right, I'm covered. I mean, I don't take advantage of that, just like my father didn't take advantage of that or anybody in my family. But the truth of the matter is, we have a degree of respectability within our communities, and we know how to protect ourselves if we have to.
Do you feel like you come from a family, whether it's your parents or grandparents, or of activists, of fighters, more fighters than activists? I feel like it's a better.
Yes, but not activists. I mean, I'm really the only activist in the group, because you know that wasn't where my family role. They was just basically trying to build contemporary society. That was their mission in life. I mean, my father would have, and I keep on going back to my father, because there's a lot that you can get out of Johnny B. Jenkins. Let's just be real. Yeah. And I think one of the things that was really important to him is that, you know, you got to sustain yourself. You got to be able to build yourself. You can't go out there with a sign on a stick talking about how you're going to change the world when you can't even do anything for yourself. So Dad's whole thing has always been about building yourself and making it easier for you to help build others if need be. My father did get annoyed by the way I would approach things, whether I was in the punk scene, whether I was in the political scene, you know, because in addition to being in the punk scene, I was still getting more and more political. So, and you know how punks are. We always got all these patches on our stuff, on our jackets and things like that. And one time my father just told me, you know, if you was a boxer, I would say you were telegraphing your punches. I already know what you're going to throw before you
telegraphing your. What does that mean? Is that, is it giving it away?
I know what you're going to throw before you throw it. I see you coming a mile away. So my attitude was like, okay, got to take that one to heart. You don't see me often wearing colors, so to speak. You don't see me with all the patches anymore. You see me just more or less dressed down. There is a certain trademark look, I guess I have. But the truth of the matter, because courtesy of that picture that's on Wikipedia.
I love it. I love it that picture made it so far.
That picture is like the picture that everybody. But it's funny because it's like, that's as good as it gets. I mean, do I have Antifa stuff that I wear? Do I have symbolic stuff and sayings on shirts? I sell them. But yes, I do. I do wear them out. And, you know, I don't have a problem wearing out something that has a political statement, but truth be told, it's depending on how I'm feeling that day. If I want to wear, if I just don't want to just basically draw attention to myself on a political level, I won't wear it. I mean, there's certain situations, depends on how I feel. Sometimes I will wear, an anti-fascist shirt. Sometimes I'll wear a shirt that has Ice Cube on it. Other times I'll just wear a shirt.
I kind of want to, there was something I read, I think when it had to do with abortion, maybe a protester, but something about doxing that you were mentioned in. Mm-hmm. That's your term, or I was.
It wasn't my term. And for a long time I was hesitant in using it, but cause I don't think it's, I never looked at doxing on my part as being a particular tactic. When it came out, and I make this point all the time, it wasn't us that started it. We just improved on it. Because what we did, reason why we were going in that direction was simply because it was just another way of getting more, as much information as we could about the individuals that we were dealing with. The anti-abortion activists were out there doing it already. The courts were siding with them. And we was like, okay, so if it's okay for them, this is important. I usually just basically like to watch and see what the right is getting away with. And I try to get away with it too. And that has always worked for me.
It's really smart. That's all I can only say. That's really fucking smart.
Yeah, I mean, if they get away with it, I get away with it. I don't care what the propaganda on our side is. Yeah, but they're being protected by the hierarchy and this and that. No, fuck that shit. No, if they're doing it, we're doing it. That's one of the things I learned in Charlottesville. It was like, oh, so you got a militia group of motherfuckers that are going to be out there with their guns? Hey, I'm carrying. I mean, and in this case, my attitude was like, okay, so if they're allowed to go out there and put the names and addresses of abortion providers in, then I'm going to do it. The one thing that you won't see me do is, you know, harass them, use it as a weapon against them. When I get your name and number, I have all intentions of putting it out there. I mean, just get that straight, because people need information about you. If you are sitting up there talking about how you go kick everybody's behind, if that's the case, I'm just going to let people know who's coming. And it's been very effective.
Do you ever find that it like shuts? I feel like a lot of these fuckers are narcissists and bullies. And I can imagine that when you're like, oh yeah, you want to do all this. And when you name it, do you ever watch people just back down? Because like they don't, they're not. I mean, I can imagine people threatening and being like saying, "Oh shit," but they don't have the fucking balls to do any of it. So, do you ever see people?
Yes, I do. I do. I see them backing down. Sometimes it's too late because they've already caused some damage. Unfortunately, and this is where you have to start being careful about who it is that you are profiling. Some folks out there actually use it. I mean, and this was back in the day, use it to beef up themselves and say, "Hey, look, I'm on this website. They're targeting me. I'm important." And everybody else would come down and say, "Yeah, he's important," and start uplifting the guy. And then they make a big deal about me and trying to get up on the website and all that. And that's when you got to start graphing how exactly this is going to go. Are people going to get anything that they can use in the future if we put this information out? Like, there was some guy, I'll tell you this right now, there's some straight up glory hounds back in the day. We always tried to avoid the glory.
We call them posers.
Yeah, this was a major one out of Western PA. When he heard of me, all he did was talk about me. You know, we weren't even talking about him. We didn't even knew he existed. And then he challenged us to, he gave us his driver's license. He gave us a picture of his driver's license, his social security number, his home address, and said his real name and all of this. And then we're just like, "Oh no, no, you want publicity." And sure enough, the guy was sitting up there talking about how me and him should work together. And it could benefit both of us if we did some sort of public thing where we look like we're fighting with each other and we get all the media attention. And it's like, "Oh, hell no." It also kills your credibility. That's what I was looking at. That's what I was looking at. It's like, man, this isn't a game. No. I don't want you for real. But I'm also not stupid enough to make you the poster child of one people's project or whatever. And sure enough, the man vanished. The man disappeared. But this isn't to say that he didn't have anything that we shouldn't, that we had to ignore. In some cases, whenever we saw something that was not going to benefit him and something that was important for everybody to know, that's when we started talking about him. And that's when we started talking about all the people around them.
I want to segue this conversation into Brian Widener, because it seems like there's a Racing Hate documentary then that was turned into the movie Skin. And I'm just curious, like, you know, I mean, again, I feel like you stepped up your game by like trying to help people that you probably fucking hated to a certain extent, I'm sure. But then, I love this story because it seems like you were both able to kind of, you must have been kind enough to him to let him kind of see you as a person, and that it also probably was unsafe at some point, maybe. I don't know. I'm just curious. I want to hear more about your friendship. I don't want to have you talk about him if you don't want to, but I'm just curious on all this whole world, because to me, that's a really wonderful part of your story, in my opinion.
Well, see, that's the thing. A lot of times when you're dealing with Brian and other people who had also gotten out, you're dealing with folks who were just trying to, who came into the white power scene trying to figure out how to make their lives worth a damn, how to figure out how they're going to go forward, and realize they went in the wrong direction. So as they get older and they started realizing newer things and how much they alienated themselves from the world, that was when they figured, okay, I got to get out of this. And you don't know how. And you're like, "Screw it, I'm going to call this guy. I don't know why I'm going to call this guy. This guy's going to want to kick my ass or whatever." He got, actually, it was his wife who called me because he was still too nervous about calling me. And then we got on the phone, and all we did was talk about music for 3 hours.
Nice. What's up?
No politics.
What was your commonality in music, if I can ask?
He was in the punk scene, too.
Nice.
Yeah, it was in the punk scene too,
and it just speaks to the wonderful connections that music brings all of us together, especially in a community.
Indeed, and I never, like I said, nothing I do is necessarily a tactic. So it wasn't like I was saying, you know what, I'm just going to talk about music so I can get them off guard or anything like that. No, that ain't how it works. And by it's just who I am. I like talking about music. I like talking about bands. I would say that if there is a tactic that I do employ, I think one of the first things I try to do is get it away from the politics. If we're gonna, if our first conversation is to argue politics, that's not how this works. I mean, yeah, there's some folks that I work with right now that I've dealt with in the past that I helped get out of the white power scene, which really did come at me with discussions about politics. And, you know, that's not a problem. Willing to have that conversation, but it's going to take a while before that ice is fully broken if we do that. So I try to avoid that. My whole thing is trying to get to whomever a person is. Because the person that I'm talking with is not a white supremacist at that point. It's not the totality of his or her existence. There's a reason, like I said, there's a reason why we all go in the directions that we do. So my mission is to just basically find out what those reasons are. And bottom line is also the most important thing. This also comes from my father. You have to come to me. I'm not going to go chase you, asking you to get out of all of this. I'll put some seeds in your head. But in the end, you got to decide for yourself whether or not this life is yours.
I'm curious on how much you see, if you see it or not, of trauma being related to all this kind of stuff.
All the time.
Which almost makes it sadder, because if people could just deal with their shit, they wouldn't have to hate everybody else.
I mean, come on. So, I mean, one of my closest friends who was in the white power scene has a tattoo. Daddy sucks.
And they have daddy issues, apparently.
Hey, I mean, you laugh, but the fact of the matter is it all goes back to a whole thing about how a lot of folks get into this scene. We are all looking for the hell. I looked for that. When I was in the military, I didn't find it. It just brought me into an even lower state of depression. I tried to kill myself once while I was in the military. And I think that once I got into the scene, I found what I was looking for. You know, everybody is always looking to make their lives worth a damn. Sometimes it's easier for others. Easier for you than it is for others, especially if you are basically, never mind the people who were born on third base. How about the motherfuckers that are always on the bench?
How do you feel at this moment in your life about having done this for yourself? Do you feel like you've done that?
Yeah, I think I have for myself.
I see it, but I'm curious to know how you feel about it.
I've been so busy, caught up in trying to help others out. That they're actually doing better than I am. I mean, personally speaking.
Yeah.
But that's all good. That's all good.
It all comes back to you.
I'm in an area in my life where it's, in the end, my life isn't about me. I'm good with that. I like having a legacy of, you know, being out there for people.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. And because that's going to go a long way. That's going to go a long way. My story's still being written.
Yeah.
But I like the chapters that I've already put in the book.
What do you think? If we have to think about it, I want to get into music in a minute, but I'm curious if you were to map it out, what do you think the next three or four chapters are going to be about?
The next three or four chapters is pretty much going to be about how I am looking back, you know, what it is that I helped create, what it is that I can still help create. I think for me, I guess, to be cliched, a sense of accomplishment on my part. But I mean, it's funny because one of the things that I very seldom do is talk about, you know, how all of this benefits me. And that's probably one of the reasons why I haven't really thought of what does it mean for myself, because in the end, I've never really considered myself. And I think if anything, these last, whatever happens in the future, I mean, because I'm 55 years old, man, I'm not going to be here in the next 20, 30, 40 years. Well, maybe I will be, but maybe I'll be 105. But by that time, I think right now at 55 is now where I am going to be coming to figuring out how do I, as I have always, as I was always say, stop and appreciate the things that I fought. Yeah, I think with me, I think it's always been a case of, you know, it's so funny because I always tell people to appreciate the things that they are fighting for. And I believe I've done that for myself.
Yeah.
But I think there are things that are missing in my personal life or whatever that I want to actually, I want to fill the void. And those are going to be things that a lot of people won't know because those start becoming personal. You know, people who are not in this life are going to be a part of that. And I don't want to bring them into this world necessarily.
I want to shift to music. I want to take the last 15 minutes and just get into music because I feel like there's a lot of other stuff. But to me, this is really important. I'm curious on, I don't know, there's all these like questions like, what are the five desert albums? I'm wondering if who you see in your world, who you feel like are the three to five seminal bands that are in your own. I want to get more. I want you to just be, it's about you right now. I want, you know, what are the ones that really made an influence in your life and whatever, forever short or long, whatever album, it doesn't have to be like such a all or nothing situation.
Oh, I'll be here forever if I started talking about the bands that really influenced me or anything. I mean, we could talk about, I mean, you said four or five. There aren't just four or five. You talk about Cameo, talk about Prince, talk about, let's see what we can do here. Cameo, Prince, Full Force, the Jackson family, the Neville brothers. You can't leave them out. If I, let's see.
Don't forget the Meters.
Hey, if I say Neville brothers, you're going to bring up the Meters.
Of course.
There is no way.
There is no one without the other.
That's basically the Meters. I mean, the Meters is just under the Neville brothers umbrella. So we're good. you know, Isaac Hayes, you know. It's just like Bad Brains and you know, a lot of bands that no one's ever heard of, like Headstrong, The Souls, as we talked about, New Breed, Sharif Hobley. I mean, these are friends of mine. Friend Sylvia, Inspector Seven going into Hub City Stompers, you know. I mean, sometimes the most influence comes from the band, from the people you know. You know, I mean, and there are bands right now that are not even coming to mind just yet. You know, I mean, Suicidal Tendencies. I mean, see, this is how easy it is.
Keep going.
See, I mean, I will play Bad Religion, who just played here and I missed their show because I thought they were going to be playing next month. Apple, a punk band called Apple out of New York. They just lost somebody. And it's like Vision.
What's Vision?
Vision is a hardcore punk band from out here in New Jersey. That's basically, in many respects, since they were pretty much set a lot of the standard of hardcore in New Jersey in the late 80s, early 90s. You can find stuff on YouTube. Just look up Vision. You can find them on my YouTube channels, because I videotaped a couple of Vision shows, but my favorite one is them playing at a club called The Melody in New Brunswick. And it's the most defining video of that band. Unfortunately, two of the members in that video are gone. Dave Franklin, the lead singer. Sean, he's gone. World Infernal Friendship Society. There's a band called World Infernal Friendship Society. That's
best fucking name I've ever heard for a band.
Oh, they're so beautiful. They were so beautiful. I mean,
is it mostly punk bands or?
Well, this is kind of, you got to see World Infernal because it's more than just punk. I mean, Pete Ventonio, he comes out of New Jersey. He was in some bands called Sticks and Stones. He was actually in a precursor to Vision, before he started up with Sticks and Stones and all. But then he became Jack Terrycloth and started a World Infernal Friendship Society, which is a completely eclectic as hell. I mean, I guess that's the word I can use, because it was punk, but wow. Yeah, you have to see them. Just look them up. I mean, like I said, I'll be here forever if I was to just sit here and talk about it.
Give me 10 songs on a mixtape that tells your story of music.
It's real funny, because I would say Soulville by Isaac Hayes. It's on the Shaft soundtrack.
Can you give me a why for each of these?
I was just getting to that. I would say Soulville. I mean, a lot of people would know the theme from Shaft by Isaac Hayes. Every black household in the 70s had the Shaft soundtrack. My problem was, it was a double album. Dad lost the record that had the theme from Shaft on it. Instead, he still had the record that had a song called Soulville. And to this day, if you put that on, I'm done. I got to hear it about 3 or 4 times.
And just real quick, and I know I never understood, I only really learned about Gordon Parks in the last few years. And the fact that he directed that, I was like, holy shit, that guy, what a fucking story there. But go back. Okay, so we got that one song.
When you ask me who, what it is that's gonna really get to me, it's gonna be a lot of gritty stuff. It's like, Soulville is about, you know, it's about what life is like in the city back then. But that's while USA for Africa was doing We Are the World, I was purchasing Sun City, I mean, by Artists United Against Apartheid. Now, that was a sampler platter for me, because that was a lot of bands that I had never heard of before. A lot of bands that at the time, I considered to be underground, like U2, you know? If I go for 3, Prince is getting in there somewhere. And if I'm going to throw Prince in, Let's Work. One of the nastiest bass lines I have. That bass line makes you want to take off your clothes and do the nasty, nasty. I mean, if you're not naked screwing somebody while you're hearing this song, Let's Work, or I should say, if you are, you got somebody pregnant 3 times over. It's not a slow song. It's not a love song or anything like that. It's just beat. I could go down, by the way, if I'm going to bring up Prince. I mean, I guess I would say the 4th song would be If I Was Your Girlfriend by Prince. That's on the Sign of the Times, which, by the way, was his best album, Sign of the Times. There aren't too many bad songs on that album. And just saying If I Were Your Girlfriend would just really do a disservice to the album if I don't say any of the other records. But I just want to streamline it. If we go to 5, I mean, I haven't brought up anything by Suicidal, but damn it, how would I laugh tomorrow if I can't even smile today? Suicidal just made you just, I mean, Suicidal, when I Suicidal Tendencies, I should say.
What were they like? I don't really know their music. What were they like?
They were a punk hardcore band, but they were more metal. They were more on the metal side, still are. And they, just like the Bounce Associates in New Jersey, they had a huge crew that just uplifted them. And I love it. Robert Trujillo, Hill plays, I can't even say his name right. I apologize. Who's in Metallica now. He was playing, that's how he got his start. He was playing bass for Suicidal. While I'm at it, I got to bring up Eric Peterson. Great musician and great.
Go back to Eric. I'm sorry.
A lot of people do not know who we're talking about. And this is where I say, just do a deep dive on YouTube for Eric, E-R-I-K,
Peterson. And Mischief Brew is his main band,
Mischief
right?
Mischief Brew is his band. And if I say any song of his, it's got to be Dirty Pennies.
And it feels like he really, I mean, again, I don't know the word, but it seems like he embraced so many different kinds of punk music. There was a clash in there. There was like, even like some of it was almost like fucking pirate songs. I mean, he just embraced so much different kinds of music within what he did.
I mean, there's just,
it's such good energy.
There's not enough. I mean, it might be cliche to say this, but there really isn't enough to say about the man. And I wish he was still here.
Do you have footage of him from your time recording?
I did shoot him, I believe twice. So yeah, I got some footage. Some of it's on YouTube, but it's just like, you sit here and you just listen to this dude. It was just his guitar. And it's like, and I'm gonna tell you something. When you give me somebody who can get real rhythmic in there with their guitar, I'm there. I mean, you got a nice little beat going with your little acoustic. And that brings me to Ani DeFranco. Ani DeFranco, and the song that I was saying, oh boy, Napoleon, but there's so much. I mean, Napoleon from the Living in Clip, that version. And she's a hell of a writer and she's a hell of a player. I've always said, if she was not a woman, she would be considered one of the top guitarists of all time.
I just want to bring up that these two people you just mentioned are both hugely politically active.
Yeah. Yeah. And that helps. That comes right into it. I mean, that makes all the difference in the world. And I'm not really necessarily talking about political music in this whole list. But that is where I'm gonna gravitate towards. But it's scary because there's a lot of bands out there that I would not go anywhere near because of their politics. But I would still respect their musicianship. Pantera's one of them. Ted Nugent is another. Ted Nugent, I can't fuck with him when it comes to the guitar. I want to hit him upside the head with a crowbar, but but it's just like, I mean, he's an asshole. Pure fucking asshole. That's it. But where am I at? I'm at 7 or 8.
I don't know. Let's do four more.
Okay, let's do four more. All right, so I mean, Ani has a whole bunch that could cover that four, but if I don't throw in Missy Elliott after her win, and I just say Missy. Just Missy Elliott straight up. You know, you got to be real on that. Public Enemy, I mean, the album Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back is always going to be very important to me. You know, Bring the Noise, you can't. If it wasn't for Public Enemy, a lot of the direction I was going in wouldn't have been realized. Public Enemy, I mean, I was not politically minded until Public Enemy came out. I mean, I knew I was going in that direction. Public Enemy took me over the side, you know. Grandmaster Flash and The Message, they did, they helped that along too when I was a kid. So we have to add them as well. A lot of the music that I listened to really was that gritty, really was that hard. Remember, back in the day, there was music that wasn't even allowed on the radio when I gravitated towards at least finding where that was. I mean, a lot of Prince songs were like that. And you know, I'm going to give a shout out to bands like Rick James. He definitely, you know what, his important song, man, everybody wants to say Super Freak or Give It To Me, Baby, Mr. Policeman. Was a tough little cut, and it was done in, it's off his Street Songs album that was done back in 81, and it sucks that a lot of the stuff that he was saying back then is still relevant today. Stevie Wonder, you haven't done nothing. Actually, no. Stevie Wonder, if I'm going to say a Stevie Wonder song, I am going to have to say Living for the City, because that song will always just put me down. Superstition's another one.
Love you to work on a
because
mix.
Because I'm also a Neil Young fan.
Oh my God! I gotta be real about it.
Have you
seen Neil Young before?
Never saw Neil Young before.
Neil Young's fucking amazing. Another political.
I mean, I didn't even bring up Tom Petty while I'm at it too. So I mean, like I said, we could be here forever. But
let's. I love you to. We'll find some way for you to make a mix, even on YouTube. I love you. I love it. I just feel like
I usually do my mixes. I mean, I don't do any mixes.
All right. Well, whatever.
On YouTube,
I'll do a
playlist. There's some stuff on.
I love that this ended with music because what I'm hearing is you're lighting up when you're talking music. So why not bring it in? Like if I was so structured about what we got, I keep talking about the thing, then it's going to suck.
Well, see, that's the thing. If you notice, we've been talking for a pretty much of almost an hour and a half, but we have been talking all this time. How much have we been talking about? Did we need to?
No.
But did we need to? Exactly. And I think really that's what it's all about. Why do you go out there and fight for what you do? We just spent almost an hour and a half talking about why. Yeah, I chase after Nazis and ruin their lives in case anybody hasn't picked up on it yet.
What's that?
I chase after Nazis and ruin their lives. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. It doesn't pay much. And I will, you know, Villanova just did a documentary about me recently. It's called We Don't Walk in Fear, but it's kind of like a situation where it's being shown in film festivals and all that, but I'm trying to set up situations where I can actually just show it to folks. So I can't put it online because, you know, it's on the film festival. Once it shows up online, that kills it.
All right, I'm going to let you go, man. But it was a fucking such a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate your generosity and your time. Thank you so much. Please support us as well as you can. I do this every year. I spend a few $1,000s. I love it. But, you know, any kind of funding, we're looking to get into nonprofit status. If anybody has any that, you know, can do any of that work and can would help us out, we'd appreciate it. We can pay you something. We're looking for people to help us build to the next level. A lot of this is really about archiving and telling people's stories and archiving people's, you know, stories through the podcast. We have a separate project that's the Jewish Vindizanos Archive, which is about the same thing. And, you know, as much as I love doing it, I'd love it to not cost me too much, and I'd love to get some more support, you know, in different ways. Even if people can share about it, even if you can share the podcast, because of how Instagram works, it kind of limits us posting about our own things. And so even though we have an amazing podcast with really super guests and very well-known people, we can't get the word out as much because we're blocked by our main way of getting the word out. So anything you can do to help share, we have the main podcast is just Vintage Annals Archive Outsider Podcasts. There's a Jewish Vintage Annals Archive podcast. There's one we did on the show called Minx. There's one about a musical we did, which is about how to dance in Ohio. Yeah, and anyway, we're doing some great stuff. Check out our website, vintageannalsarchive.com. A lot of archival stuff up there. Video archive. We have all these like deep dives where you can learn about different topics. Anyway, I really appreciate your support and I love doing this. Until next week.